Hello and welcome to A Muggle's Perspective. I'm joined today by Braden. Braden, how's it hanging?
It's hanging well. Doing all right, man. We were talking about a little like production, you know, stuff on the front end of this podcast, working on a little intro fade there. I thought that was top notch.
Just talking ones and twos, you know, just chatting it up about levels and fades and
yeah. And I'm sure it's like podcast etiquette that you don't come in and talk about that right off the bat.
Yeah, that's what really made it. It worked because we referenced it as soon as possible.
Yeah.
I think that's what the people want.
Yeah, my greatest fear was that people would be listening to this episode and not pay attention to that, you know, to your work on the board there.
Yeah. I appreciate that. You know, we wouldn't want it to be in vain. Right. Like Harry's life. Right.
And like, you know, like we were talking about, we've still got time. We're still working out the kinks.
Right.
Figuring out each other's tendencies, really gelling
kind of
as
in
a
the
podcast
trial
team.
Phase of the podcast.
Yeah.
You know, you throw stuff to the wall and you see what works and then you go from there. Right. You don't want to coach to a scheme. You want to coach to fit your players. Right. You want to build the scheme around the talent you have.
Yeah. I couldn't say it any better myself. I think you've got it figured out.
And what's great about that analogy is that it applies to this situation. So
definitely. I feel like some of those isms from like coaches anymore in professional sports, like we're just so desensitized to it. It's like we all just nod our heads and be like, yeah, no, he's a great coach. I think he's got it figured out. And like when you step back, it's like he said nothing.
Right.
Well, you can say anything.
You don't want to get aggregated. You don't want to be the headline.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I get why they do it. I totally understand. And to be fair, a lot of the questions they get asked are just stupid. Yeah. Just no weight or substance to it at all. Because I kind of learned that. Yeah. Not hefty at all. I think like Blake Griffin went on Jimmy Fallon and they did almost a skit about that. Like Blake Griffin was trying to talk about like how, you know, we as athletes get a really bad rap for having just like stupid answers to reporters' questions that don't answer their question. But have you guys ever paid attention to like how stupid the questions are to begin with?
It's like, just
what
like,
would you want us
talk
to say?
Talk about his impact on the game. Talk about, man, it seemed like he was playing well. Can you talk about that?
My favorite is like, man, you came all this way and you overcame all this adversity and you guys found yourselves in the championship and you found a way to pull out the win. How does that feel?
You know, it's good. It's just what it's what the guys and I have been working towards. And, you know, it really all just comes back to my teammates, really put me in positions to succeed.
Yeah, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, it's just all about getting that W. So I just try to come out here and just feed off my teammates. And, you know, they were really doing a good job getting me the ball. And, you know, we just try to do what Coach always says, play our game. And so that's just really what we're trying to do. Just, you know, go out there and get the W.
You could have given that exact answer if you were an NBA player to any of dozens of questions.
That's what I mean. That's what I mean.
It's not about answering the question.
It's hilarious that is even a part of the broadcast. Like, how much time do we waste in the pregame with the four guys sitting around a table talking about nothing, and then all the interviews during the game where it's just meaningless questions with meaningless answers?
Where Popovich is like, that's a dumb question. I don't like you.
Yeah. I've always respected that Popovich just calls out the elephant in the room. Mm-hmm. It's just like, guys, what are we doing here? What do you actually want to know?
Well, and it's like people always talk about Bill Belichick will tell you about punt coverage. He'll go on about it for 20 minutes. Like if you ask a real detailed X's and O's like strategy question, then he's like, yeah, let's like, I don't not want to talk. I just don't want to talk about platitudes and nothingness.
Right.
And like grit.
Right. Which I have a ton of respect for. It makes for some lighthearted, funny clips then. And it also, as someone who like, it's painfully obvious to me when I watch a sports broadcast, like how stupid these questions are.
Because you're like, I should be doing that. That should be me up there asking the questions.
Yeah. I mean, at the risk of sounding arrogant, sometimes it's like, how much money are these people making to just ask the same kind of question you would ask a 4-year-old after they just got a participation ribbon for like the Boys and Girls Club soccer match?
Well, don't
like,
you?
Man, that ribbon is so pretty, sweetheart. Like, how do you feel? How does that make you feel?
Yeah, do you like that? That's how I talk to my dog.
Yeah, I just...
Don't you bet there's been like focus group testing and that's why they ask those questions? Like, this is what people want to hear. They just want... They want you to say it's about the Jimmys and Joes, not the X's and O's. Like, they just want to hear that stuff over and over again. Because who's watching the games? It's dads. Who watches the pregame? I don't watch... I don't know if... I guess League Pass has pregame, but I don't watch it.
Yeah. I don't know. I can say as a fan, I would so much rather have like in-depth, like I would love to sit and listen to Bill Belichick talk for 15 minutes on like how exactly he designs his punt coverage. Mm-hmm. And maybe some people are like, I don't want to hear that. I just want to watch the game. That's fine. But why can't we just cut out the dumb questions then and cut it all out together?
Yeah, I mean, you need to fill the broadcast slot and... You gotta have enough like this is the Powerade power question of the game. Where'd you get your power from? Was it from the blocks or the steals? Like what? Allstate good hands play of the game was catching the ball.
Man, when you caught that one touchdown, you had really good hands. How does it feel to have really good hands?
Yeah. Tell me about that. Talk about the hands.
It seems like you enjoy playing the game of basketball when you're out there. Can you talk to us about that?
Listen, subscribe, rate us 5 stars on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Play.
We're not on Spotify, right? That's the only thing we're not on?
Dude, I don't remember. Okay. We're not on one of them, and it's either Spotify or Stitcher, I think.
I'm going to look up Spotify.
You're just going to look it up right now.
I don't think we're on Spotify, but I'm going to... Hey, Muggles. I am wrong. We are on Spotify, folks. Nice. Merriman Media.
Look us up on Spotify. Don't look us up on Stitcher, probably.
Our last episode was March 6th on Spotify.
You know what doesn't work is telling Alexa to play Podcast A Muggles Perspective. Alexa cannot find it. I don't know where they source it from, but it does not work. We're covering chapter 34. We wanted to get some lighthearted banter out of the way now. Just to kind of tone you up for what the episode's going to be like. It's going to be a lot of this, just cracking jokes. You know, just back and forth.
Just a couple of ant boys making goofs.
Yeah,
we wanted talking shop, you know.
Because this is just a classic hijinks, you know. A lot of Ron eating and other standard Harry Potter tropes.
And we needed to fulfill the recurring request from Rachel to talk more about sports. Yeah. So it's not that we wanted to do that to start off with, but like, Rogi gets a lot of that at home. And so we wanted to touch on that.
You get your quota in early.
Yeah.
This was good because we hit on sports and the even more niche topic of sports broadcasting complaints. So you're welcome.
Really going after a specific crowd here.
We've heard you, and we're responding to that. So chapter 34, The Forest Again. This is the one where Harry knowingly marches to his death. So.
Classic.
Yeah, wanted to start out just kind of asking for your updated thoughts on Snape, Dumbledore, Harry finding out he's going to need to die, because we did a live read for chapter 33, and in real time, that was 2 weeks ago. So we got your in-the-moment reaction at the time, but I wanted to know if you had thought about that more. Are we still mad at Dumbledore? Do we still see Snape in a whole new light? Where do we stand on liking Snape as a character?
Yeah, so I think I've sort of come down from my Dumbledore hatred. Not even hatred, just like... misunderstanding, I guess.
I love it. You just, Dumbledore, it's on me. I blame myself for not understanding how good of an idea it was. Like, you're walking it all the way back.
I don't know if I'm walking back that far. So we were kind of talking about it before the show. Like, I am frustrated with the whole situation, but I think I'm supposed to be as the reader. It's a very, like, you thought I, when I said that earlier, you thought I was frustrated with JKR, and I'm not. I think it's well written, and I think she means for you to feel incredibly torn right now. I just don't like the...
We're just going to do a quiet. Just a little one.
just a little beef.
Shnamoose boosh.
I...
Braden's boosh.
Oh, no.
Bwah, 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 bwah.
It's Braden's beef, y'all. It's just a little beefy in here.
It's not super... It's been beefier.
Yeah, it's been way beefier. I've totally lost my train of thought.
You are frustrated with where we are. Harry has to die, and that's annoying.
Yeah, I think I was just being so set up, or setting myself up maybe for this, just this epic battle, right? It's gonna be Harry v. Voldy, and I kind of thought like Neville was gonna step in somehow, and
sure,
honestly thought Draco was gonna like be the the sacrificial lamb in some way. Like still kind of thought he was going to get involved. Like I thought it was going to be this giant showdown that like even the movies have been building towards, where it's like our whole budget for this last movie is going into this epic fight scene. And so the idea of Harry just sort of like marching to his death, like you said, is a little bit of a letdown.
It definitely subverts your expectations.
And it's not a letdown in terms of weightiness. Like, it's not like it's just a cop-out ending. Like, right. She just kind of like, I don't really know how to end this, so I'm just going to have him, like, sort of walk to his own death. It's incredibly, like, as we would say, full of emotional heft. It's just kind of not the ending I think I was anticipating, which is not a bad thing, but it's got me feeling like confused and torn, I guess.
Yeah, and that's fair. And there's still a couple chapters to go.
Yeah, and that's what is playing with my mind. Like, I think that, so this is 34 and there's 36 total?
Correct.
So I do wonder if there's, because it seems like that's too much text left for him to just walk in there and be like, here I am. And then Voldemort's like, sweet. And then just kills him.
I mean, there's plenty of time for Harry to be dead. And then, you know, he's the rallying cry. Everyone rallies around his death, the survivors.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. I suppose he could just go ahead and kill Harry. And then we get the epic, like, Neville, Ron, Hermione sort of banding together with the rest of DA, whoever's still alive, and like killing Nagini and hopefully killing Bellatrix. I would really like to see Bellatrix die by the end of this book.
She's too happy. We need to knock her down a peg.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like the whole, like they've been saying for a couple of books now, yeah, Harry, like you're the star of the show, but we're not fighting for you. We're fighting for like what you represent and like the cause, you know? And so it kind of drives that point home.
Yeah. I felt like this got real biblical. Like we really parallel Harry with Jesus here. I'm sure there's thousands upon thousands of takes and analysis on that. There's out there
books written explicitly about it.
I'm sure yeah, it just like it I knew there were some of those themes running throughout the books as we've kind of gone through the series, but this is the one time I feel like it kind of hits you in the face, at least it has for me, that it was like, oh, this is pretty obvious, like he's the Christ figure. And it was always like that was always the plan from the beginning, is that he was gonna die for the people, you know.
Yeah, so. Self-sacrifice in the form of death for others. I mean, it's, you know, you see it time and time again. Like from Obi-Wan Kenobi to Frodo and
yeah,
anybody else. just picks up in that tradition. So yeah, we're not as mad at Dumbledore. It, you know, it's not a fun plan, but it's a logical one. Is that kind of where we land from a Dumbledore perspective?
Yeah, you, I mean, the more I got to like process it, it's like, I mean, I still hold to some of the arguments that like Rachel made.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. When she came on, like I, that's how you feel as a fan. You're like, no, it seems like we haven't explored all options here. And I still feel that way in some sense, but like, I think more so, I feel like Dumbledore did what he had to do.
Yeah.
And he had the courage to do what he had to do. You know, like most people in his situation aren't going to love, you know, having to lead a child unknowingly to their death.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, he had to do, at the end of the day, he had to do something. I mean, it would have been easier to just sit back and be like, well, I have theories about something called the Horcrux. But he went out and he did a lot of legwork. It's like, don't let perfect be the enemy of good, right? As far as like considering all options and like making sure we're doing things the exact right way. He's like, well, we got to get a plan in motion. And I'm sorry if it's right. Not the, you know, if you, it could have been optimized 10% more, but there's a trade off there, I guess.
Right.
So yeah, I have just a few more kind of points and questions than I usually do, sort of walking through the chapter, just because it's a solo chapter episode that we actually read, which are pretty rare. Usually yeah. The solo chapter episodes are live reads and stuff like that. So it opens with the very first line is finally the truth. And so I wrote like cynical Harry. This is Harry that's like, okay, like I've been told everything now. And that just kind of speaks to, I think, your frustration and Rachel's frustration for sure of Dumbledore not telling him everything, hasn't told him everything. Like, has that been sort of a growing thing behind the books? Is like the nature of like secrets, like when do you tell someone something? And like, has Dumbledore been lying to Harry by omitting?
Well, I think the way I've started to think about it is like let's say Dumbledore did tell him early on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Harry's younger. He's not as mature. Mm-hmm. He hasn't been through as much, depending on what point you decide to tell him. Mm-hmm. And at that point, do you trust his? I mean, he's always been an incredibly mature kid for his age, but at that, still, do you trust him to, you know, knowing his heart and like his bent towards protecting those around him, does he just go and sacrifice himself immediately and then we're screwed because we don't even know where all the Horcruxes are? Mm-hmm. Like, did Dumbledore think about it more in like a linear timeline of like, no, I can't tell Harry, even if I wanted to, like, we have to make sure all these Horcruxes were at least in the right direction in terms of finding them and destroying them before he finds out and connects with this realization that like he's the final one.
Mm-hmm.
Because if he were to connect with it and then just go sacrifice himself, but we don't know where any of the other ones are, like, could it be in vain, right?
Yeah, because Voldemort's going to put him on, like, real hardcore lockdown.
Right.
That's going to make it that much more difficult, if possible at all, to destroy them. And I think we got to remember, too, the timeline. I mean, Dumbledore had been thinking about maybe Voldemort has a Horcrux, but it's in book two when Harry's like, hey, I found this diary of his and like something came out of it. I could only destroy it with a basilisk fang. Like, that's when Dumbledore was like, okay, that seems like a Horcrux, and the way he used it seems like he made multiple, and that really kind of kickstarts his like hardcore investigation into it. So he couldn't even have really told him. There wasn't everything to tell him before at least that point. And then, you know, at what point did he really put it all together? And it was like, oh, okay, I bet there's a piece inside of Harry. He's speaking parcel tongue now. Like, a lot of that came out in the second book. So
right.
It's not like he knew this when Harry was 8 and could, like, really groom him and explain it to him in a way that he would be able to be calm about, like you're saying.
Yeah.
And this...
It's complex.
Yeah, and that actually leads directly into my next kind of point. On page 693 at the top... you say complex, but Harry even says how neat, how elegant, not to waste any more lives, but to give the dangerous task to the boy who had already been marked for slaughter, and whose death would not be a calamity, but another blow against Voldemort. And so that kind of, it speaks to the yin and yang of, like, it gets a complex decision to make, but it also makes, it makes more sense than you want to realize at first, because it's like, let's send a suicide bomber in, and like, if he can take out some Horcruxes, great. And then, but if he gets killed in the process, it's less of a loss than it could be, because that does actually need to happen eventually. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Right. Yeah. That's the piece that you can't, I feel like when you read it for the first time, you can't wrap your head around, you can't digest immediately the fact that, like, no matter what, it has to happen. Like, because, you know, I think that's how, you know, you would argue against Rachel and I from last episode is, like, you know, we can try everything you want to try. We can employ the rest of the order and, you know, go on a search for Horcruxes, but it doesn't change the fact that Harry is one.
Yeah. You can't do surgery and just do, like, a Horcruxectomy and just take out that part of his brain.
Yeah, which is kind of stupid that you can't because magic, but that's a whole nother discussion. Yeah.
I mean, this is almost like to the point of, like, wandless, like, deep state magic. This is the kind of this is the same kind of magic that, like, made, that is what kept Harry alive, because, like, his mother sacrificed herself. She didn't cast, like, sacrificum revelius. She just, like, did it, and it was like an inherent passive magic almost.
Yeah.
And so I think it makes, in that, that's how it makes sense to me, that, like, you know, it's embedded in a part of his soul. Like, there's not a soul surgery class that you can take. Like, there's not going to be a whole branch of, you know, that's different from turning a pineapple into a tap dancer.
Right. But if you're going to argue,
but we also could just remove it.
But if, you know, if you're going to argue, if you're going to be on team Rachel here of, like, we got to explore other options. Like, maybe we could have been doing, like, who's the best magical surgeon in the land?
Yeah. Somebody at the hospital,
you know, is it Madame Pomfrey? Do you put her on task of, like, hey, let's do some research. We've acquired some research dollars, some funding,
some galleons. McGonagall's gambling has finally paid off.
Yeah, and we would like you to assemble a team to do some research on soul surgery. See how far we can get here.
She's like, where do I slice? Where's the soul? They say a waiter man's heart is through his stomach. Is that where? Do I start there?
Yeah, it had to happen. So, there, you know, you got to wrap your mind around that. And I've had 2 weeks to wrap my mind around it. And I'm not happy about it. But I understand.
Yeah. Your arms are almost all the way around it. My next point. Let's see what page is this. Which page? 694. I'm just kind of going page by page here, I guess. The point I made is just the word all caps Neville. So, like, this is like Neville kind of getting you in the feels, you know, Neville working hard, like Neville hasn't given up, like still committed. When he goes, Harry, hey, you're not going to go sacrifice yourself. Like, we'll die for you. Like I'm laying it all out there for you. I'm committed to this cause.
Yeah.
For me, that's the most powerful that's ever hit me of the times I've read this.
Yeah, it's Neville's become sort of a leader on the battlefield, I guess, through the last few chapters, and it's almost like he knows, you know, like, why else do you ask that question? It's like he knows it's coming, and he's still choosing to, like, serve with fierce loyalty. So, yeah, it is kind of that one's got some emotion tied to it, that little interaction there. Mm-hmm. I hope I say this all the time. It's got to get annoying, but I hope they do that justice in the movie.
Me too.
And judging by your
Stop
face.
Stop judging my face. But that's the same face I make every time you talk about the movie. What do you want me to do? You want me to be like, oh, well, lucky you that it happens. Like, I'm not going to tell you. Yeah, and I think what's cool about this is you got to remember when the initial prophecy was made that made Voldemort be like, oh, I should kill Harry Potter. It could have equally applied to Neville Longbottom, right? They're like sort of conjoined from that point. And so him taking over this mantle from Harry as like, I'm committed to the cause, like I'm going to be a leader about it. I think is just really is another neat bow kind of put on that storyline.
Is it kind of meant to be like a passing of the torch?
Yeah, I mean, I think Harry is pretty explicitly like, if I, you know, when I die, we need to bump it back up to three people that know about what's going on. You know, he'll kind of take my place in the trio, Harry, Ron, you know, Ron, Hermione, and Neville.
Yeah, I think for me, that was like where the hard strings get pulled is like, I forget how it's phrased, but it's kind of like he starts to answer the question and stops himself.
Yeah.
Cause he's like, you know, no, I'm not going to sacrifice myself, but in the event that like things happen, you need to make sure the snake dies.
If you get a chance.
Yeah. Yeah. Because like, as you're reading it, at least I'm trying to put myself in his shoes, and the amount of anxiety and fear that's probably like overwhelming him at this point, it would be so easy to be like, okay, look, man, like nobody else knows, but like, this is how it's actually going to go down. And like, I basically have to die and I'm freaking out, man.
Yeah. Like the desire to unload that onto someone else.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think the bravery is obvious as you watch Harry like kind of decide to march over there to Voldemort. But I think where most of the bravery lies, and it's almost kind of implicit, I think, is like that he's deciding to just shoulder all of it emotionally as he passes, you know, friends and like, I think at some point he sees Ginny.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. Ginny's the next. So after Neville, I didn't have a point about it, but Ginny is like comforting a girl that like had gotten hurt, and he like walks right behind her. He's like, okay, I'm just gonna keep going.
Yeah, yeah, man, that's tough.
Yeah, yeah, it's just him not wanting to burden them, but also not wanting to be talked out of it, I think.
Yeah, because I mean, how old is he right now?
He is 17. Coming up on 18. Yeah.
Trying to imagine yourself like taking that on as a 17-year-old and not talking to anybody else about it and just making that, like having that resolve to be like, nope, this is what has to happen.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that's another crucial thing about the whole Dumbledore. I mean, even from 15 to 17, like, should he really have told him 2 years ago? Like, hey, just so you know, like, it's going to be about 2 years, but, like, you're going to die. Is that better than finding out night of?
Yeah, I think that speaks even more to Dumbledore doing it the right way, I guess, if you're arguing for that. It's like, do you tell him early enough to where then he's, like, does it lower his quality of life for his last 2 years or whatever? You know, it's like that age old question of like, do you want to know how you die or when you die?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, you know, neither really. But if you had to choose one, probably how.
And just like never do that thing.
Well, I mean, like if it's an illness or something, it's like, OK, that's going to come at some point. But like, I'm going to live my life until that happens.
Live my life. It's funny. So, question five, Resurrection Stone. Were you like, oh, that's right, there's a freaking Deathly Hallows Resurrection Stone? Was this cheap?
Kind of. I thought like it was just kind of snuck in there. Like, oh, and remember that from the story? And we weren't really sure if it was real or not. Well, it is. And now he's using it. And now back to his emotional like turmoil of walking to death.
Yeah. It was sad him saying goodbye to Neville and Ginny. And now he's going to say goodbye to the ghost memories of his parents, whose death triggered the whole, you know, the beginning of this story.
Yeah.
And also Lupin, who just died like 20 minutes ago.
Yeah. He is fresh in the grave.
He is. Yeah. His body's literally like in the Great Hall.
Yeah. Also, who raises the kid now? Because now godparent is dead too. Yeah, or going to be dead.
A backup godparent? Does he go into like, I don't know, like some kind of orphanage? I mean, so Tom Riddle was an orphan and he went back to the orphanage every year, but then went to Hogwarts. You know what would be hilarious? He gets raised by his godfather's family. The closest family he's got. The Dursleys.
Oh, God.
Full circle.
That wouldn't be hilarious. That would be horrible.
No, it would be hilarious.
It would be kind of funny.
Because they know about, like, it's, you know, Petunia hates Harry because he represents what she wanted, which is getting to go to magic school. He represents her sister that got to learn how to do magic and she didn't and then died. But this is just some little magic kid that shows up on your doorstep. He's not close in age to Dudley now, but he does have grandparents. The Tonkses.
Man, do we get to see any kind of reaction out of the Dursleys if and when Harry dies? And they, like, will they get told? Do we get to see any kind of reaction out of them? I guess you're not going to answer that.
But I'm not going to answer it. But yeah, so out of the Resurrection Stone come James, Lily, Remus, and Sirius. And so this time it just struck me that, like, the four people that came out of the Resurrection Stone, it could have been anyone dead. It could have been Dumbledore. It could have been Mad-Eye Moody. It could have been Dobby. But it was his parents and his parents' best friends. I just thought that was kind of interesting, like, how much of a role they had played the Marauders, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a little eerie, the whole Resurrection Stone scene, specifically with his parents, because they're like, I don't know, maybe I'm reading too far into it, but like, it's kind of a morbid scene where like he's acknowledging that he has to die and he's kind of making that decision internally and they're just smiling at him like, we're so proud of you. Go ahead. Go do it. Go die.
Yeah. And then, well, Sirius, someone said like, well, we're part of you. Yeah, we're part of you, said Sirius, invisible to anyone else. So like they're really just manifestations of his memories of them, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, maybe I've read too far into them being like actually there when they're not, but still kind of odd.
It's like there, but not there. So then he walks into the woods. He finds the group of Death Eaters. And then who's there? And even I had forgotten about this. Hagrid, like, watches Harry sacrifice himself. Is there some kind of symbolism here? He's tied to trees.
He's like he's one of the other guys hanging on the crosses next to Jesus.
Is he?
But those guys were actually guilty. Hagrid hasn't done anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
So maybe that's not really that's not the parallel, but
is there some kind of symbolism there? I'm trying to think like what it means. Like this, like Hagrid was, it's almost like you're stripping away. We're in like a parabola, right? Like the first we saw, you know, Harry's parents was how it started. And then the next thing was like Hagrid takes Harry to the Dursley's house. Hagrid is also the one that got him from the Dursleys, taught him about magic. Like he's the first wizard that Harry knew. And so he's like his longest friend.
Something.
Something.
Yeah, that's, I don't know. I feel like for me, I just read it as JKR writing that in to
make it sadder.
Yeah, honestly, like she's really twisting the knife in this chapter. Like wants you to get there emotionally with Harry.
Yeah.
Maybe there's more to it than that. That's just how I was, you know, I'm listening to it today and I'm like, oh, are you freaking kidding me?
Yeah.
Like now we have to listen to Hagrid like sob as he watches this happen. Like,
yeah,
I can't do this.
Literally the most meaningful possible, like Hagrid would have gladly like, no, just kill me. Like Hagrid loves Harry.
Oh, 10 times over. Like he would have.
Yeah.
You know, if Voldemort just like everybody stop. Whoops. And hold on. What if we kill Hagrid instead? Mm-hmm. I would be satisfied. What if I killed Hagrid?
I'll leave it up to you.
Yeah. Hagrid would like knock Harry out mm-hmm. so that he could sacrifice himself.
And I just realized this is all also happening in Aragog, like the spider's hollow. The spider, which was owned by Hagrid, and Hagrid was framed by Voldemort. Like Voldemort knows Hagrid, like from school, you know, they have a relationship.
Yeah, I forget that. I don't think I even really remembered that as I was reading this, but I also like for some reason I'm picturing all this scene happening in Hogwarts and it's not. Mm-mm, like
we're in the forest.
Yeah.
Again.
Again. I don't know why. It's like a subconscious thing. I'm like, oh yeah, mm-hmm. they're in like the Great Hall of Hogwarts.
All the good guys are up in Gryffindor Tower, just common rooming it up.
I don't know why. That's what's in my head. I guess I need to reimagine that.
Beyond that, I didn't really have anything specific that I wanted to ask about. I mean, Voldemort's head tilt and everyone like is cheering and then he casts the spell and.
Yeah, but to me, it seems too easy. Like, as I was reading this, it's like Voldemort's smart. He's really smart.
Mm-hmm.
So does he just capture Harry and just torture him for the rest of his life? Because he's like, I'm not going to kill you. That's going to kill me.
Plot twist.
So you're going to become my little minion boy.
Yeah.
I'm just going to like hypnotize you. That'd be a disgusting ending. If like JKR really wanted to go dark with this, it's like actually Harry becomes a slave.
He like breaks his mind just like Neville's parents.
Yeah, because... And I'm not saying that, like, that's, I don't know, that's not a prediction. I'm just saying it seems too easy. It seems like...
No, mark it down.
Yeah, that's fine. It seems like Voldemort is smarter than this.
Okay.
Like, he's caught Harry destroying some of these Horcruxes. He knows what's going on.
Yeah.
So are we just banking on the fact that he doesn't understand the prophecy?
We're worried that we've tipped him off.
Yeah. Not even that we've tipped him off. I mean, maybe, but like that he couldn't get there on his own.
Here's what Dumbledore would say. If I can speak for the trees. Dumbledore would say that Voldemort's whole deal is that there's stuff that he just has a blind spot for that he doesn't understand. Like he does not understand like real friendship and camaraderie and love. Like how like that can matter to people and like enrich your life. He doesn't understand the value of a soul that hasn't been broken. He was like, oh, I can live forever if I just split my soul a bunch of times. Like, sounds great, you know? So he just does that. Like as soon as he heard that was an option, he did it and doesn't spend a lot of time really thinking about the machinations of, okay, what does that look like? Is there a way that Harry could have become a Horcrux? Like,
yeah.
He's so self-centered, he only thinks about it from his perspective.
And I understand that. It just feels like Voldemort's...
We're underestimating him.
Yeah. Yeah, severely. Because it feels like this time around, he's had a lot of time to think things through. And, you know, he was like a little worm baby for a long time. And, like, mm-hmm. was, you know, kind of just plotting his whole comeback for...
Mm-hmm. 10 years. Yeah, 12 years.
So to not give him the credit and just assume that he's so arrogant that he's incredibly short-sighted and kind of ignorant almost. And then you couple that with the fact that I think there's too much text left for it to just end like this.
See, you can't do it that way, though, you know?
Yeah.
You're reading the book.
Yeah. I know. I'm overanalyzing it, but like that's what I do.
There could be a huge epilogue just talking about Ron and Hermione's babies and...
Yeah.
Or, you know, describing what it's like to live in post-apocalyptic Voldemort hellscape world or...
Or Dumbledore is resurrected by the Resurrection Stone and he like pipes in at the last minute and is like, guys, I'm alive.
You shall not pass.
So, Harry, you don't actually have to die.
Because of Dumble reasons.
I figured it out while I was in my grave.
Yeah. The Odin sleep. So, yeah, my last question was just where do we go from here? We've kind of already touched on that. Do we care? You ready? You ready for some Dewey cares in chapter 34?
Yeah, let's see if there's anything we don't care about.
Okay. Do we care about Colin Creevy?
Oh, well, leading off one for one, no.
No, we don't care that Colin Creevy died.
I mean, you don't have to throw me under the bus like that. Yes, we like it's sad.
But relatively.
Relatively to like what's going on around us right now, no, it's not at the top of my mind.
It's like, yeah, people died. Like, we get it. He's one of the people. This was a war.
To me, that was right underneath writing JKR writing, you know, Hagrid into this scene. It was like, hey, as if we weren't sad enough that Harry's coming to terms with like sacrificing himself. Also, Hagrid's hanging over there, and don't look now, but Colin Creevy, you know, Harry's little fan.
Yeah.
A child. He's dead. So
feel good about that? Bet you don't.
Yeah.
Okay. Do we care about Ginny? We get the walk past Ginny, and then we get the like second to last line where he's like, and then right before he died, he thought about Ginny and kissing her, and it was nice.
Yes, we care a lot about Ginny. She's going to be heartbroken.
Is she? I'm not saying she's not going to be sad. I'm just saying like... I don't see Ginny going into doing the whole, like, this just breaks her. You know what I mean? Like, she's, like, a strong, resilient character. Like, it's going to make her, like, super freaking mad in her sadness. Like, what kind of, like, mourning do you see for Ginny?
I think it'll break her for a while. I agree with you that she's resilient. She'll bounce back. Like, I don't think she's going to spiral into a lifelong depression, but...
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Especially knowing that she was wanting to be in the fight so bad, you know, does she start to kind of like question, like, what could I have done? How could I have helped? And what if they would have let me? So there's a lot of like guilt that can maybe come like unnecessary and unjustified guilt that can come with that. So, Yeah, I care about Ginny.
Do we care about how much Hannah looks like Ginny? Does that factor into this or?
I think it partially influences my love for Ginny. It's always sort of been like a parallel for me.
Yeah.
So yeah, that makes sense. That's all getting connected in my head now.
I guess that does make sense why I like Impossible so much. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of other like pop culture, redheaded females, Pippi Longstocking, Annie, Little Orphan Annie.
Amy Adams.
Okay. Is her hair like long like Hannah's?
Sometimes.
Okay.
She's an actress. I mean, you know.
I'm not well versed in the Amy Adams verse. Do we care about, this is a good one. Do we care about the fact that Harry, upon death, is leaving his invisibility cloak in the hollow? For yeah, Death Eater
I
to
did
just find.
Almost lose my mind when I listened to that. Like, almost yelled out loud.
You gotta go hang it up on a tree and then sneak in. Bury it. You bury it.
But
you text Ron and Hermione.
Or, like, at least light it on fire or something. Like, don't just give it to the Death Eaters. I mean, I'm gonna cut him some slack on this because he's probably not doing a lot of thinking outside of, like, dealing with his own mortality, yeah. But like, uh, it's so fitting. And it was the exclamation point on me just being really annoyed this entire series with the misuse of that freaking cloak. Yep. So, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because I do remember Jim Dale reading that to me and me going like, are you effing kidding me?
Because they watch him take it off. It's not like, oh, where's it going to be? Yeah,
and so then he just drops it on the ground.
So those are my Do We Cares. Sounds like we care about that one.
We care about that one.
Okay. We got two more chapters.
Two more. Does Voldemort make Harry his slave?
Is there too much text for him to do that, or not enough text for him to do that?
I think there's probably just the right amount.
Is there an eighth book I haven't told you about? Would you be happy or upset to find that out?
I have been assuming that Fantastic Beasts is the only thing after this, but I have not done the research. I've been making sure not to spoil it for myself, you know?
That's smart. How do you feel about Eddie Redmayne in general? Big Eddie Redmayne guy?
I know who that is, but for some of the listeners who may not, maybe you could get into that.
It's the lead actor from Fantastic Beasts. He has an Oscar for his portrayal of Stephen Hawking in that biopic of Stephen Hawking.
Yep.
So he plays Newt Scamander.
And then Jude Law is in there, right?
That's the important thing, is Jude Law playing young Dumbledore, yeah.
Yeah, yep. I like Jude Law. That makes sense. If you couldn't get Benedict Cumberbatch, I think Jude Law makes a lot of sense. Yeah. So,
yeah. You do get some, there's some Johnny Depp in there. He has been recast going into the third film, but.
Yeah, isn't he dealing with a lot of legal stuff right now?
Yeah.
That's kind of a bummer.
Mads Mikkelsen is taking over. We do have a, if you'll permit me, we have a voicemail really quickly.
Hi, my name is Charles Lee. I met Rogi when he and his wife came in, bought some paint in my paint store here in Marshall. We talked about board games and Harry Potter and a few other things, but I've been listening to the podcast ever since. Finally caught up to date, so. Went through
seven. We bought this paint in like November.
This is hilarious. So you don't know this guy outside of the paint store.
No, I met him at the paint store. He was a nice guy. We talked about board games.
And then you were like, also, do you like podcasts? And he was like, yeah, man, I like podcasts.
It was probably
like,
Rachel.
Dude, I got a podcast.
It's usually Rachel that does that when we're out in public.
Okay. Yeah. That is wild. Well, thanks for calling in, Charles. It was Charles, right? Yeah.
There's still another minute of voicemail.
Oh, yeah. Let's do it.
Month or so. I am a Gryffindor, according to the online test, and my wife. I could also see myself being placed in Hufflepuff. But I have just really appreciated listening to you guys. I was just stocking shelves in my own store here, and I finished the last episode, so... I'm all caught up. It's been awesome. The moment I was most excited to hear about was Snape killing Dumbledore. I really wanted to hear Braden's take on that. Keep up the good work, guys. It's been pretty cool. You guys have mentioned a few people that I know around Warsaw. So a lot of connections. And it's just been awesome to hear you guys, and keep up the good work. Thanks. Bye.
Well, thank you, Charles. We appreciate... I always appreciate hearing from a fan, and it was just him saying he likes the podcast, and we like that you like it.
He really went to work. If you met him in November, I mean, he's had a few months, but like, we've been doing this for 3 years.
We have over 80 episodes out, yeah.
Which, I mean, I guess if you work a job where you can listen to like 2 or 3 a day, you know.
But yeah, other podcasts to listen to, you know.
It just blows my mind that people would hear about it and hear like our first 5 to 10 episodes and still stick with it all the way to the end.
Rich and I always say, like, it starts out a little rough. You know, we're learning how to podcast, but it hits a groove.
Yeah.
And then later Braden is like, I don't know if I want to keep doing this, but then it hits another groove and then we're good. It's like it comes in waves. The highs are worth it. Stick with us.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Charles. That's crazy.
Yeah. Appreciate you. Appreciate your paint store.
I feel like I have all these friends in Warsaw that I don't even know.
You do. That would be just the best, would be if we like rented out the American Legion or something and we're like, coming to town, Braden, signing babies and kissing books.
And I just do like come a stand-up by. Comedy set.
Yes, you guys remember episode 48? Yeah, yeah, Chad members. Man, when Rogi just kept saying emotional heft, and I was like, lay off the emotional heft, buddy. It's podcast-specific stand-up.
Good times.
Good times. Coming to an end. Don't have a ton of book left to go, but we appreciate you guys sticking with us to this point. We appreciate Charles for calling in. We would love to hear more of that. Haven't been getting a ton of voicemails lately. I guess by the time you're hearing this, I mean, we'll still take the voicemail. We'll play it. But yeah. Not going to be a lot more episodes coming out probably by the time you heard this, which is okay. It's fine. It's always got to wrap our minds around that time difference thing. Yeah, thanks for listening. Call in to 978-768-8370, 978-POTTER-0. Like us on Facebook, Instagram. Any other shout-outs?
No, do we tell people to leave a review on our podcast?
You should.
I feel like a lot of podcasts I listen to tell other people to leave reviews, so, you know.
Rate and review, five stars, really helps.
Maybe we could, like, you know, that's something we should have been doing. We should have been reading reviews.
That's true. I know people that, that's how people call in. They ask questions and leave in a five-star review. And so that's okay. How you get your question read is by.
Yeah. Yeah.
Shout out TJ Warren, sitting out the rest of the year for the Pacers. Not going to play. Just got announced.
Shout out Oladipo getting traded to our arch nemesis, Miami Heat.
For a bag of peanuts. Karis LeVert had a game-winning dagger the other night, last night.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening, guys.
Bye.